The Monday means tests. It gets better every week, David King, this footy. It gets better every week.
Crazy, isn't it? Morning, G.
How are you? So Professor amazing. Adam says 288 combinations remain with a round to play.
288?
288.
Well, how are we supposed to get anything right if there's still 288 combinations?
Astonishing.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And 35 of our 1,500 players have the Swans in second place.
See, I don't feel anywhere near as bad about my tipping being on the bottom row right now when you say that. How the hell are we supposed to get that right? 288. So I wonder how many have Melbourne plummeting outside of the top four.
Yeah, yeah. So if Sydney beat St Kilda and nothing ridiculous happens with percentage, we're down to 35 to see if someone's got it.
But it's only a goal or two.
Yeah, yeah. There's
not much.
Few possibilities, aren't there?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so give me a King's Gambit on where we find ourselves after round 22.
Round 22, Jared. Who's your best player?
Health.
Health's your best player. Sydney, almost a clean bill of health. So Kennedy, obviously, has been the talking point. And Naismith, we haven't really seen all year. Geelong. Not one injury to be spoken about at the Cattery. Melbourne, obviously Tom McDonald, but he's been AWOL for a while. Brisbane have got a couple of concussions in Adams and Archie. I just want to get back over the Cats. When was the last time we've seen a team have the luxury of resting Smith and Duncan and resting Selwood and Blitzarves the week before, and you know Dangerfield's had his little moments and had to effectively a rest? We haven't seen this for so long. I think we're just dusting over the fact that they've had the luxury of resting prime movers for the last fortnight. Like, what a position to be in. Like, it's the top spot locked away. So my attention now goes to this. They've got the greatest selection pressure on right now. And it's a fantastic position to be in if you're Chris Scott. He has never been in this position before. This is as good as it gets, Jared. Top of the table, playing great footy, everything's working, and you've got to find a way to leave three players out. It's amazing. It is absolutely unbelievable what's happening for Geelong and by Geelong right now. So well done to all the planning and the strength and conditioning department to get it to this point. And this goes back. You know, we talked about Chris Scott at the start of the year saying, well, this is what we're going to do, and if it works, it'll work big, and if it fails, it'll fail big, and I'll wear it either way. And here we are. Like, I know it all can go wrong in September. I know all that, but let's just appreciate what's happened to this point. It's frightening.
Our categories are steeped in the squeeze for position, home finals, making it, qualifying, but there's no escaping today's big issue, and that is Essendon from the final game of the round. It feels like there's an administrative Hunger Games on at the moment to see who will survive and who will be sacrificed in the aftermath of it. This is usually these things start at the coaching position, but I said to you at the start, this is port of call is not the coaching position in this instance. So a season that started 2-10, but this was rock bottom. It was rock bottom what they delivered yesterday. And there's clearly white hot anger in the Essendon community.
There's three people trying to get on a two-man life raft, Jared. Someone's going to pay. And it looks like one doesn't care who the other one is as long as it's not them. You just see white towel in football. You just see it, and that's what it looks like. You know, that second quarter, you can go through all the numbers you like. The effort wasn't there. The bare minimums weren't there. There was a club with zero standards. I mean, these two clubs entering that game are in the same position. They both can't make the finals, so what are you doing? Well, you're representing your fans. You're representing that the future, whilst it doesn't bring finals this year, we're setting up for next year and we're challenging every player on the list to be a better product today than what they were last week. And the coaches are driving these non-negotiables through the course of the game. And you see the second quarter, they cough up 7 goals, 2-1. 11 tackles they laid. Pressure 161. So we talk a lot about pressure because you can't always get to the tackle. So the chasing pressure is important. The frontal pressure is important. So what are you actually doing when you don't have the football, which is 99% of the game? Pressure 161. So they get blown away in the second quarter. You think, well, they'll fight back. I mean, that can happen. That can happen. They'll fight back. And then you get to the last quarter. I showed a stoppage last night, and I hope you get to see it, Jared, because if it were a training session, the coach would have blown the whistle and said, hey, bring it in. Stop training, bring it in. What is this? Get back out there, get serious, let's start to move. They were stationary. So the last quarter, they kicked 9 goals from 18 entries inside the forward 50. They had given up. They had given up Essendon. 8 tackles for the quarter, pressure of 152, which I think would be the lowest quarter for the year. Now, that's a guess, but if it's not the lowest, it's in the bottom 3 or 4. So everything we talk about with Essendon rears its head every 4 weeks. They don't buy into the defensive side of the game. So I think they've got enormous system problems, enormous. And everyone keeps telling me, yeah, but, you know, that it'll correct, and another year, and they're a young side. They're a young side learning bad habits. That's where they are. There's no advantage being young learning these habits. So something's got to give. And I said it last night, they've had the opportunity to have this discussion with Alistair Clarkson. What could you do with this group? You don't necessarily have to give him the job. Hey, what do you think this list's at? Where do you think we should be in 12 months' time? Are we taking the right steps towards our next premiership? Because they've been nowhere for a long time. And they've fumbled around. For a ruthless club of 20 years ago, they're a shadow of that right now. So that's why we're at this point. And I'm not just talking the coach. I'm talking up the chain a bit. So what do you do? Do you sit on your hands and say, no, it'll come good, it'll come good? Or do you make drastic change, shake the tree a little bit, see what falls? Because I feel sorry for the Essendon fans who keep turning up and keep putting their money up. You know, they've been supporting for a very barren time this last 10 to 15 years. So something's got to give.
It would be interesting to know what their internal findings in their review were that reassured them that success is coming, because it runs counter to the public performances when it's really mattered in 2022.
So what does Kevin Sheedy think? Well, he was on that review.
Yep.
He was a major player in that review. Well, what does he think? What does he see? Because I'd love to know his thoughts. Is he thinking that – is it all about list? I mean, we sort of had this discussion yesterday. And you chop and change with lists. That's what we do, because you see different things. You can have a month of good football, a month of bad football, and things do change. The facts change. But if it's not the list, then what's missing at Essendon? They can't have had a bad list for 20 years. They just can't have. And I don't think the list's that bad. I think there's a lot of tools. But again, they only play one side of the game. That's when they've got the footy. And that's, unfortunately, 2% of the game, 1% of the game.
Were they right not to buy a ticket in the Clarkson lottery?
No, they've made an awful mistake there. Why wouldn't you be in that? Like, these are huge businesses, huge. You know, $100 million sort of annual turnover. It's not a development ground for coaches. I understand you've got to take a risk at times through the course of the journey on an inexperienced coach at some point, and hope that he becomes a great coach and maybe wear a little bit. But I think this is Ben's third year. I think his first year was basically under the shield of John Worsfold. He did all the structural side of the game. They won 6.5 games. Last year they won 11 games and played some pretty good footy, some really exciting footy, albeit offensive. And then this year the same flaws are still there. So what's getting better? So that's my problem with what they do at Essendon. And I just don't think they're ruthless enough as an administration on themselves. It's a pretty comfortable playground out there.
Yep, I don't think it's comfortable this morning. So this reckoning has been a little while coming. So we wait and watch. Yeah, and if they've moved through an internal review and now get their way for the external review, I mean, they've wasted half a season at that point, haven't they, on the decision that they didn't make at the time. And then by the time that work is done and the shakeup happens, Clarkson's not on the market, how many positions change from the top down? And we're talking from the president down, we're not talking the coach in this instance at the starting point.
Say you're in charge of Essendon, Jared, right? Just put yourself in that position. I don't really understand the point of doing a full review at the end of season when most decisions are made prior to the end of the season. You need to get yourself in order.
So they're behind schedule now.
They're in real trouble now.
Yeah.
So they you would think logically that Clarkson is off the table for Essendon, and they would have doubts about their own setup. That's an awful position to be in.
They are the big issue today. Essendon, it's a live scenario. Sam Edmund is keeping tabs on what's happening out at the hangar, and you've had plenty to say. 0433 98 11 16, temper a mattress like no other. We'll try to get to some more calls as we go. We are in our means test. There's so much to play with. They got that right. Preliminary final integrity, the pressure index, the best bits, the debate, it's all to come with David King. Sam Edmund has told you that all the pressure, all the heat revolves around the president's position at Essendon, Paul Brasher. Mitch Cleary's going to step further than that now, saying that Brasher will step down as president at a board meeting later today. So the two figures that Sam mentioned, Peter Allen and Dave Barham, one will likely be the president of the Bombers by the end of the day. So that's the starting point. As things burn away at the hangar after yesterday. Our means test, we're going to go deep. Swans and Pies, D's and Blues, next. Dealer's choice, David King, you can choose. Are we doing Melbourne and Carlton in their respective categories first, or are we doing Sydney and Collingwood in their respective categories?
We don't do enough Sydney.
I think you've owned Sydney.
Oh, I love Sydney.
For months.
Well, John Longmire.
I've been scratching my head going, Sydney, they're going to finish second.
I know.
They're going to lift the cup, and I'm still not sure about Sydney. I'm much sure about Sydney after watching them yesterday.
Yeah.
So well, I bow to your good judgment. So are we doing that?
Let's do that.
Let's go. They got that right in every respect. Biggest crowd at the SCG in 26 years. It was a straight throwback to when your Sundays used to be lunch with mum and dad, and then in front of the telly to watch the SCG game. And weren't they something?
Panda Dr. Edelson every 5 minutes in the crowd. Look, it's a great game. I mean, the build-up, it was everything, wasn't it? It was box office. I wish DeGoey had have played because he was the wild card that Collingwood needed all day, but Sydney was so professional. I thought it was one of the coaching performances of the year. So what do you have to do to beat Collingwood? Well, you've got to stop their counterpunch. Okay, our pressure's got to be high. Their pressure was enormous. So how do you set the game up to allow the Swans forward half to put on pressure? Well, we can't be drawn inside the contest. So every time the ball went to a live ball situation, a spilt ball, it's almost like Sydney would ring them, would be 3 metres outside the Collingwood players who'd be invested in the middle. So every time they got the ball, they were under pressure, frontal pressure coming from behind, had to operate at a speed, they weren't comfortable. Continue to turn the ball over, game on turnover, favoured Sydney heavily. Don't let Nick Dacos create from back half. So they tag him there. So McRae says, I've got to move him because I can't have the kid getting tagged at half back. Big tick. So straight away, he goes into the midfield order half forward, effectively as another midfielder. And Mills does the job. If he's around you, Callum, you just lock him away. You look at the game thinking, well, how do Collingwood get back into this? Now, Elliott was well clamped. Shame that Jack Ginnivan went off because he does some things that create scores, but unfortunately he went off mid-second term. And I just thought John Longmire's ability to say, okay, now we've got the scoreboard looking like a 2-3 goal margin. Let's give him two enemies. Let's just take time off the clock and slowly move the ball down the ground, get deep entries and continue with this pressure plan. They are going to be incredibly difficult to beat at the SCG. Because of the simplicity of how they play, it is basically brilliant, and it's so difficult to take Sydney's game off them because it's built on the fundamentals of effort and pressure, all the things that you can bring every week, regardless of talent levels or form. That they've got a batch of kids that are just next level. Like Sweetfeet Gordon, our man, he's a ripper. Heaney did some things yesterday. Showed a bit of vision last night. He kicked the ball from the wing forward and then charged. Finished in the goal square, tapping the ball back to Franklin. Franklin finishes with a goal. And I might have a chat with Kane about where he sits in the competition right now because he's in serious form too,
yep.
Lance. So Rowbottom's becoming a serious player. We talk about Warner a lot, but I think Rowbottom's the one. He's a little bit He's their Ben Cunnington. He's a bit of a tractor. Like, he's just one speed all day, and he just keeps turning up and winning clearance and winning contest. And his form is so important. The clearance and contest game was the one thing we were waiting for, you know, from round, say, 12 onwards. And it's arrived in a hurry. I had a look at the ladder through the year, Jared. So at round 8, they're sitting 6th. At round 12, they're sitting 6th. At round 16, they're sitting 8th. At round 19, they're sitting 6th. At round 22, they've found their way to 2nd.
Yep.
This is what you talk about. Timing your run is everything.
Yeah. So the night they beat Fremantle in Perth, that was the night they locked away the top 4 and opened this possibility up. And remember John Longmire's reactions in the aftermath and how much of that was built on a plan that they concocted together and executed perfectly. They'd opened up this opportunity and they've been able to sweep through. They got one step to go to make sure that they bank it against St Kilda at Marvel.
Well, boring John lets his emotions out every now and then. He doesn't give us too much in the post-match. You won't learn one thing from his press conferences, Jared. You won't. But I think when you see him on the bench, invested in the group, I think he's a great bench coach. I really do. He's eyeballing the players. He's instructing. He's letting the upstairs crew do what they do in terms of the mechanics of the game. He knew this was coming. We talked about this 18 months ago. He said, "I've got this group of kids. They are special." He said, "I don't know how quick they can arrive." I think that, you know, I looked at the experience through the Sydney core. So they average 110 games per player on the weekend, which is 6th for the round. Okay, so it's not as young as you think. Geelong are 145 games on the weekend. So it's a season and a half behind Geelong per player. So this is ahead of time. I love the teams can do it ahead of time, because then you've got what, 5, 6, 7 years to do it again.
They have a big window.
Yeah. So this is so exciting for the old South Melbourne and Sydney Swans fans.
And the wisdom and experience on a Monday of Robert Craddock. Crash, hello.
G'day, Jared. What a dramatic day. And what about this weekend's footy? It's terrific, isn't it? I loved your exchanges with Kingy. And I was thinking, Jared, who would you rather be? Like the Cats, with everyone saying, oh, they're just playing with the magnets, they're just waiting, just fiddling around sort of thing, with all this pressure on them, or the dear old Brisbane Lions, are they still in the competition?
Yes.
Even up here, people are saying, oh, no, it won't be the Lions' year. I mean, it's not a bad place to be when you're equal second on the ladder and people are subtly writing you off, you know?
Makes for a big Friday night in your town, doesn't it, with Brisbane and Melbourne to meet?
Oh, look, and Jared, you know what? I feel so good for Greg Swan and also Chris Fagan because, yes, everyone says that the Lions need a premiership to frank this era, and in a way they do. But I tell you what, having lived through the years where they were just going nowhere, plotting for year after year, to see sell-out crowds again in the Gabba, they've got the code up and running. I really feel they deserve enormous credit.
Crash, the most desperately sad story in Australian sport of the past 4 or 5 days is the death of Paul Green. Just before we start on this, just tell those who aren't fully aware who Paul Green is, what his place in the game was.
Yeah, well, he was a very underrated halfback who won Rothman's medal, sort of like the Brownlow, in two states, in Queensland and New South Wales. He only played 7 Origin games because his career was sort of blotted out by Alan Langer, who became one of his great mates. And it said a lot about Green that he loved Langer. He went on to coach the Cowboys to that famous first premiership in 2015, where a field goal allowed them to beat the Broncos. But, Jared, he committed suicide last Thursday morning at about 10 a.m. If you said, what is the story behind the story? There was enormous sadness for Paul in that people close to him felt that he did, once the rugby league caravan moved away from his door, he struggled like so many coaches so often do. And I actually wrote a piece today looking at how AFL coaches have struggled, like guys like, you know, Mark Thompson. We all know poor Danny Frawley took his own life. And then there was James Hurd, who, you know, had so many big issues after the peptide scandal. And that's the part of life people forget for coaches. And Graham Arnold gave a wonderful interview today saying that, he said, adrenaline is the most addictive drug of all. And when it stops, it's so hard to replace, you know? We had a rugby league coach, a guest on the back page a few weeks ago, who recently was dismissed. And in the green room, he said, it's your weekend you notice it most. You know, they used to be taken for granted. You had your schedule there. There were times of high pressure. The adrenaline was flooding. Now you don't know how to plan for them because you've never had to plan for them. So, yeah, so it was it has rocked the community. Jared, he was a real local boy in Brisbane, a Winner Manly guy, loved his home suburb, and high achiever. He had a pilot's license in grade 12, if you don't mind, Jared.
Yeah.
Was a Harvard graduate, you know, an amazing, amazing person.
What were the scenes like across rugby league games across the weekend, Crash?
Well, there was enormous sadness as people searched for clarity, and everyone had a nice story about him. James Tamo, you know, from the West Tigers, who of course was part of the Cowboys Premiership team. He said he was ironically ahead of the game in terms of mental health for players. He was developing a wellness app. And his longtime sponsor, Mick Power, said, we will continue and we will finish that app and we will get it up and it'll be a tribute to him. But I felt, Jared, if you said what, quote, crystallised the story, for me, it was from the former Cowboys chairman, Lawrence Lancini, who said that Paul Green was a brilliant mind and a perfectionist, and a perfectionist carry a very heavy burden in life.
Yeah.
And this is so true, where... if he was so hard on himself, like the two teams that he had coached, the Queensland State of Origin team last year when he lost the series 2-1, but they won this year under Billy Slater, and the Cowboys, which he coached, and he left them after a couple of disappointing seasons, they're now up in the saddle and running second. And, you know, that's hard for a coach to deal with, seeing teams sort of, you know, blossom when you're away. So, yeah, but the burden of being a perfectionist, of sort of wanting everything just right, of judging yourself so hard, you know, I just felt Lawrence got it right, Jared.
Yeah, so it feels like a moment, Crash, that will lead to some form of lasting change, that this immense tragedy will have a legacy. Is that how you feel, even though it's very raw?
Yes, I do. I can see a legacy here where coaches, after they finish their jobs, will be better attended to. We tend to leave them for granted, Jared. We really do, because we think, hang on, they're the teachers, they're the mentors, they're 50-something years old, or Paul's 50th birthday was next month, and you think, no, they're fine, we've got to worry about the players. But it's not true. I did an interview with Chris Fagan last year. We sat down for coffee, and he pulled out a pencil at the end of it, and just on the napkin, he said, you know what worries me? He said, have a look at these names. And he wrote down some of the names that I spoke about, you know, Hurd and Frawley. I think Walsh was there from Adelaide. And you know, there was a long list of guys that had suffered, not so much during the job, but after the job. And it does leave a vacuum. And sure, there are coaches that move onto other lives, aren't they? Paul Ruse, you know, moving to the States, and Kevin Sheedy selling the good word of the AFL around the place. But I tell you what, Jared, I read this line about English soccer managers a few months ago, and they said there's so many English soccer managers who get up in the morning and water the roses because they've got not a lot else to do.
Yeah. Very sad, Crash. Thanks for sharing that on all of its different layers. Melbourne Storm on Thursday night. So this is what I didn't expect. I thought, you know, they were broadly dismissed going up against the all-conquering Panthers. It felt like they were right up against it. I reckon that was the right scenario for the Storm to have a bold stand against it all. But to win 16-0, I hadn't expected that.
No. I mean, the Panthers are a weakened team at the moment. They've got James Luloi, their absolute inspiration, Nathan Cleary. They're both sidelined with Stephen Crichton in the centre. So they're not quite what they were. And, Jared, you know that situation where the team that's clear at the top of the ladder in the last month, they just lose games, you know. I wonder whether Geelong will lose one of the next couple. But they're back, the Storm. And this is the thing. Good teams often have that little lull around July, don't they? They just lose a few, and the coach, even though he pretends he absolutely hates it, there's a little part of him that thinking, oh, now, suddenly they're all listening to me again.
Yeah.
And there is a little bit of that. So they're high in the saddle. It's a big year for them because the Dolphins have stolen half of their premiership, half of their pack for next season. So with the Bromwich brothers and also Felice Kaufusi. So, and there is a talk today that Cameron Munster will join Redcliffe, not next year, but the year after. And I understand, as of a phone call about 10 minutes ago, Jared, that is very, very, very close to the money. They really feel confident in getting Cameron Munster.
Right. Well, that'll send a few tremors. Yeah, that'll send some tremors through. The golf has been quite a spectacle for the whole week, really. It was Tuesday that the report emanated out of the UK that had, as a matter of fact, Cam Smith joining LIV. So that a hard reality. He sidestepped that at his press conference. The undisguised bitterness between those who have remained loyal to the USPGA and those who have defected as the court case was heard, with three trying to have the best of both worlds, and the USPGA players, you know, who made the observation, they talk like, we'll see you on the tour. We'll never see you on the tour again. So very territorial. And then Scott Scheffler, who walked through Cam Smith's line in a deliberate breach of etiquette that was impossible to interpret any other way as the resentment of Smith's next move and Smith's own words, which I probably won't repeat on Monday morning radio. It has been, I mean, the chasm is so deep and so wide, but it's the bitterness that is so striking.
It really is. And I understand in the locker room, it's just whatever we're hearing, it's magnified by a multiple of two and three. Money just creates greed, doesn't it? And it's the resentment from the PGA guys that the LIV guys are trying to have their cake and eat it. And, you know, it was Scheffler knows the etiquette. I mean, Jared, golfers who play three times a year, they've got it drilled into them that you do not stand on anyone else's line. There is no suggestion at all that was an accident. And for every comment supporting one side of the argument, there's always a comment comes back. Jared, I must say, I did laugh at a comment. Paul Azinger said today, the tension of Will Zalatoris winning a terrific playoff. He said, this is the sort of feeling he will get that he can't, that guaranteed money will not provide. And there's a guy called the Faceless Caddy on tour, and he tweeted back immediately, let me tell you, as someone who has got not much in their bank account, that sort of money, that sort of feeling can be replicated by a huge sum. In other words, he said, put it in my bank account and I'd be, hey, that'd be as happy as winning a playoff, can I tell you that? So it's all about money and that. Cameron Smith, oh, look, Jared, you know how the sports world works. They've asked him directly three or four times, are you going to LIV Golf? And the fact that he hasn't denied it, there's your answer, isn't it? I mean, put it this way, when some of the golfers who weren't going to LIV Golf and people speculated that they were, they denied it in about 10 seconds on social media. They said, there are rumours out there. Can I immediately confirm that they are incorrect? And I don't want to... So, but all Smith said is, yeah, I'm in for a bit of a tough month, and so it's all out there.
Yes, and talking to those around the tour over there on that day, they just say, as a matter of fact, he is going. So I was interested to read... So there's been a lot to read and listen to on this front. We've spoken about it all year. Malcolm Knox's think piece on the weekend had Smith on the wrong side of the pub test if he chooses to leave. That's not... I don't agree with that. And that certainly wasn't our real-time exercise, whether it was Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning. I feel like there's, in our sample, which was a decent sample over 3 hours, the majority was with Smith if he chooses to go. There are those who feel vehemently against it, but there are plenty who are prepared to put the USPGA on trial and what they have done to Australian golf. I'm not sure that he is the wrong side of the pub test when he makes this decision.
No. Well, let's put it this way, Jared. There was a Golf Digest writer sent out into the crowd at a recent LIV golf tournament, And he actually tweeted, he said, my assignment for the day was to interview people over their concern about human rights issues in Saudi Arabia. And he said, guess what? The first 30 people I've interviewed said, basically, I don't give a stuff. They just want to watch the golf. So they accept that Saudi Arabia is sponsoring sports events all around the world. I conducted my own pub test, basically, just over the last week, just mixing with people. And that's the vibe. You know, that people are saying, well, you know what? What about the Saudi Grand Prix? What about the owners of Newcastle United? You know, and what about the fact that the Gulf used to visit Saudi Arabia and there was no complaints then? So, but it is a massive fee he's got. Jared, by amazing contrast, we're doing a rich list of NRL and AFL players. And you know the NRL salary cap is about $9 million or so. So if you put every dollar earned by an NRL player next season in a pot, it's exactly the same as what Cameron Smith gets for signing his name for Liv. It's $140 million. So that's every player in the whole competition, what they're earning next year. He sits down and if he signs Cameron Smith on a live contract, he gets that in 10 seconds. Like, yeah. It's just like and that puts it into perspective. Like, people are saying, how do you say no to it? So, because some people feel he won't stay as long in the game as what everyone thinks he is. Not one of these blokes that's still playing at 50 or on the circuit. You know, he misses home. And we always forget something, Jared. They're away from home all the time.
Yep.
You know, he's a North Brisbane boy. He loves taking his car to the raceway, going to the Broncos, taking it easy. Like, he's playing in 22 American cities may not be his idea of great fun.
No, and yeah, the one question, so he has to remain relevant at the majors. So that was sort of my marker. That's where his place in our imaginations soars. So he has to be in the majors, and that might be difficult for the Live golfers down the track. That might be decided by a courtroom. But it are 54-hole exhibition tournaments, because we now know that the prize money you win is actually deducted from your contract. So what you sign for is the money that you earn. Is that enough for his talents? So I think that's an open question.
Well, great question. You know what? I often think that. I have to say this. For all of me justifying why Cameron Smith has appeared to have signed, I'm still really surprised he has. Like, because he's not a real high liver. Sure, he's got the boat, which he goes fishing in and that. But I often think, if you made $30 million, what's another 100? You know, maybe.
Yes, yeah.
And people will burst out laughing at that statement. But he has no money worries whatsoever. So, but the thing is, Jared, Greg Norman, in the eyes of these professionals, some of them, has taken the bad bits out of golf. They hate getting cut, so there's no cuts. They hate a long week of golf, so he said, you'll play 3 days, not four. They get no sign-on fees, so he said, here's a sign-on guaranteed payment. They hate 22 weeks away a year, so he said, I'll take you away for just 14. So he's taken the bad bits out of the game for guys under the guise of, oh, growing the game and spreading the game. No. It's not that. It's just having a rival tour.